This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 283, where today AC and I are going to talk about KubeCon 2018, some deprecation news, and some clarity. Recorded live December 13th, 2018. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
How are you doing?
I almost messed you up on that intro. I was trying to do something to kind of make it to make you laugh.
I was like, don't look at his hand gestures. Stay on target. I got Jacob. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm home. It's been nice. I've been home for the better part of a week now. So it's nice after being 2 weeks on the road.
I've missed your Lego background, honestly.
Me too, man.
You've created inspiration for me at my new house, and I haven't unpacked my office at all. So I've got some unpacking to do, and I'm trying to figure out how do I replicate AC's background full of Lego in my office at home. So I'll see if I can pull it off.
I'll give you an idea. So let's see if I can describe this because people can't see it. But I've got my back behind me at my desk. I have like these IKEA cabinets, and on the top of the cabinets, I've got a bunch of Legos that I like to have there. I'm out of room for all these Legos. I don't have any place to put anything. And I've got the Porsche Technics to finish up and build. And that's got to go on my shelf. But then I've got this whiteboard behind them. And the whiteboard never gets used for anything. So the idea is that we're going to take the whiteboard off, trash it, and go get a bunch of little shelves, like glass shelves or something. And I'm going to mount things against the wall. But yeah, it's almost like it's getting close to Mr. Business because this is the place where the kids are not allowed to touch these Legos and break things off and stuff like that. So
yeah, fair enough. Well, I'll see what I can manage at home, and I'll give you an update when I got Lego in the background.
Yeah, man. Raise your game. Bring it.
Totally. Anyway, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, before we go too far into this, I guess, actually, hold on. We'll come back to that. How are you doing?
I'm surviving, unpacking stuff at home and kind of getting into the swing of our new house. And it's not feeling completely new anymore, which is good. And like I think I mentioned about my patch cabling or my Ethernet issues a while back and how frustrated I was about no labeling of things. I've got all that sorted out now. So I have a wiring cabinet or structured wiring cabinet that is looking a little better. And so yeah, my sanity levels on that side of things have come back to normal. But this week I have been at KubeCon, Kubernetes conference in Seattle. So we'll get into some of that in a little bit. But so it's nice to go to a non-Microsoft conference. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? It's always cool to see see how other people run a conference and to talk to those people and all that. I mean, it's just nice to step away from stuff or to different conferences.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But so yeah, in general, it's been pretty quiet actually around here. It's been pretty cold and dark, honestly. There's 2 feet of snow falling at our local ski field today.
Oh, so what, are you going to head out this weekend and go ski?
No, because everybody will be doing that. So I'm going to do the total opposite and stay at home.
Gotcha. And set up your office.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got friends coming over Saturday, so we've got some entertaining to do in the new house.
Ah, cool. Very cool. Yeah, so you say that's what you did recently. I hope that we will be able to, I'll be able to talk about this in a future show, but I've got a similar like home wiring, networking kind of fun thing to do where I know I mentioned on the show earlier the kind of like the do-it-yourself security system or taking your existing hardwired security system on your house with like the little sensors and magnets in the windows and doors. I am switching mine over to something called Connected with a K that is basically it's going to take everything and it's going to switch it from a security system into smart things And so all of my doors and windows and stuff are going to become things inside of SmartThings. And there's a whole home monitor system that's set up as well that allows you to, you can pay for like an online monitoring or a virtual monitoring company who will call the cops or call the fire department or something like that. So I've got everything I need. I think I have everything I need. Of course, it's like it's a classic home project to where I've ordered everything. I have it all ready. And then of course I start doing it. I find out that I'm not going to have something that I need. So
it's all happened with me too.
It's similar to what
lighting stuff shows up today.
But okay, there you go. So it's,
of course, I suspect I've got my order wrong and there'll always be something I'm missing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I know exactly what I'm going to do, but it requires taking the raw wire from that comes from all the sensors and splicing them and putting them in, joining them to other wires and then screwing them into four different boards and powering and blah, blah. And man, I'm particular about wires. And so I want to make sure that everything is nice and clean and something that I can take a picture of and post it to. If it's got to be able to be posted to the home automation or the cable porn subreddit and not get rejected. So
yeah, that's the mark. That's the mark. I dare not do that. I'd get slayed for my home wiring.
You look pretty good. I saw what you did. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, I got to get lots of tie downs and lots of, like, it can be a lot more tidied up. And it was my first crack, so I'm gonna wait a little bit.
First, it's get it working and live with it. Second step is clean it up.
Make it look hot. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of looking hot.
Oh, where are you going with this?
Yeah. Speaking
of looking hot. Before you do that, I have one thing I want to mention about the podcast. So, a couple weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I had thrown my back out, and a friend of mine, or a friend of the show, Stephanie Donahue, with the Pate Group, I saw her at a conference last week at the SP Fest conference in Chicago. And we're sitting there after our sessions, I think after our workshops, and hanging out. And I think we're having a drink, and she brought something up. She said that she was listening to the show. She listens to it when she's driving or when she's exercising. At this time, she was driving. And she brought up the time when, in episode 279, when I busted out two surprise sneezes, but my back was thrown out and it was incredibly painful. She said she was dying laughing, almost spit coffee all over the car. So I had to go back and listen to it. I listened to it yesterday. I about did the same thing. I didn't realize when I was doing it. It comes out of surprise when you're listening to it. So if you haven't listened to this show, if you go back, listen to episode 279 and jump ahead to the time code about 31 minutes and 20 seconds into the show and listen for the next like 2 minutes. And it sounds weird because it definitely was weird. The first sneeze was painful and you were very nice and like, oh, that didn't look good. And the second one,
that looks bad. Yeah.
The second one, I was dying at your response. It was, oh my God, it was hilarious. So
yeah, you texted me about that. And I honestly hadn't listened to it. So I, in the car this morning on the way to work, I cracked out that episode and fast forwarded to 31 minutes, 20 seconds, I believe it was, and had a little listen and cracked up in the car, snort laughed a couple of times. I was like, really, was I really mean? And so I re-listened to it. And like you said, I was like, the first one, I was like, ooh, that looked bad. And then the second one, I couldn't help myself and cracked up with laughter. Oh, it was just funny.
Oh my God, it was great. So anybody wants, if you want to know what the audible version of back pain sounds like, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, so back to looking hot. Quick shout out to a good friend of the show and listener, Olivier. If you're listening to the show, thanks for sending us the photo on Twitter. We retweeted your tweet, which is, he's our original sponsor. He's from Salad.nl in the Netherlands, I believe.
Yes.
And their original sponsor for the Microsoft Cloud Show. And he stayed in touch over the years. And it's great. He was recently in Redmond and actually reached out to me to catch up while he was in town. And unfortunately, I was out of town in Mexico at the time, so we couldn't meet up. But he tweeted us a photo. He was here visiting Microsoft and was at the EBC on the main campus. And he tweeted us a photo of him wearing his Microsoft Cloud Show t-shirt with a HoloLens on from the Microsoft EBC. And tweeted the MS Cloud Show. So we've retweeted that. Go check it out. And thanks to... we're keeping on the theme of T-shirts in the wild, we'll call this segment.
Yeah.
Where we see Microsoft Cloud Show T-shirts rocking out. And this is one of the original Cloud Show T-shirts with the new logo, not the most recent run as well. So definitely thinking ahead, Olivier, and bringing it to the EBC with you. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks a lot for doing that. I mean, and everybody else, I mean, we had another one of these that happened recently. I would love, it would be really cool if we saw other people doing this on Twitter. Like, you know, just post the tweet to us and mention, you know, at MS Cloud Show, and make sure that you put a hashtag in there, like t-shirts in the wild, of you wearing your t-shirt in kind of fun places on where you are. I mean, it'd be cool to see those things get posted. We should have a bunch more because we are now completely out of t-shirts. We distributed what we bought, like 600, I think, or 700.
Six or 700. Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah.
I think we distributed all but 250 of them at Ignite.
Yeah.
And then
we took 100 somewhere. Can we take 100 to one conference, and then we took 500 to Ignite or something? And then you had some left over.
Oh, that's right. We took 150. We took 150 to SP Fest Seattle.
That's right.
We took a couple hundred to Ignite and distributed those. And then I took about 100 to 150 to the European SharePoint Conference in Denmark 2 weeks ago and to SharePoint Fest in Chicago last week. Mm. And they are all, I have no t-shirts left. We're completely out of t-shirts. So that means we probably need to make another.
Your wife will be happy. We need to fill your house up again. Let's do it.
Exactly, yeah. This time it's your turn.
Yeah, fair enough.
But you have more room. You need more boxes in your house. How's that?
Oh, gosh. I have so many boxes right now. It's unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should do another t-shirt run when the time is right. Those were good ones, actually. Really good. Nice and soft. Got lots of comments about those.
Yeah.
A couple of other things before we get into the news. We don't normally talk politics on the show, but we're going to talk about a law in the US that got passed, which I think is worth mentioning.
Absolutely.
In amongst the chaos that is politics, there is a little glimmer of decency going on, which was passed recently. It was issued on December the 11th, so a few days ago now. And it is it called Section 3389? Is that what the S stands for, section?
Yeah, it's a law, and these are different sections of the law.
Okay. So Section 3389 of, I don't know what the HR stands for. Do you know what that stands for?
Well, so HR is a House resolution. So S might be, actually now that
a section of that House resolution?
No, I think that this S might be a Senate thing.
But it has to go through both, right? Because this is signed by the president now. Anywho.
I don't know. Yeah.
There's a section in one of these things. Which redesignates a facility of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, aka NASA, as the Katherine Johnson Independent Verification and Validation Facility. Ooh. So we've talked about Katherine Johnson on the show before. She is one of the central figures of the movie Hidden Figures, which was quite a popular movie a year or two ago now. Anywho, she was responsible for a lot of the trajectory calculations and was one of the calculators behind a lot of the early US space program. Anyway, so they're naming a building after her, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and very appropriate.
Very, very. Really nice to see. Really nice to see. Anyway, totally unrelated to Microsoft Cloud news, but, you know, hey, we talk about spacey stuff every now and again too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a good one.
Yeah, and also, in case you were really worried about Google Plus shutting down, they're doing it 4 months early, not like anybody else cares. But this article says Google will shut down Google Plus 4 months early after second data leak. And then the subtag is the underloved social network will now close in April. Underloved, I'd just cut it short and just save yourself some characters and call it unloved.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be loved for people actually have to use it to be loved?
To be underloved, exactly. I would just save yourself on three characters and just say unloved anyway.
Yeah.
Not like that's news. That's why we put it before the news started.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't very important. So, yeah. And this one, I mean, to be fair with this bit of news, it was not, they have no evidence that someone used the vulnerability that was exposed. I mean, there was
I didn't have evidence anybody was using it.
Exactly. So, well, that's true. I mean, it's kind of, we had a vulnerability in a service that nobody really used. So this tree falls in the forest. Does it matter?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Should we cover some news?
Absolutely.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today. A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. Inbox Zero is a thing of the past. We're all so inundated with email, and that's where Sanebox comes in. Think of it as an EMT for your email. As messages flow in, Sanebox does the triage for you. SaneLater sifts all distracting stuff out of your inbox so you can focus on only the important emails. That's just a taste. It also has nifty features like Sane Black Hole and Sane Reminders. Best of all, you can use Sanebox with any email client or phone, anywhere you check your email. See how Sanebox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Visit sanebox.com/MSCloudShow. Start your free trial and get a $25 credit.
All right, AC. Should we get started with KubeCon first and then we'll dive into some of the other news items we have?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know what KubeCon is a big Kubernetes conference put on by the CNCF and the Linux Foundation, I believe, is part of that or one of the... Yeah, anyway, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation is what CNCF stands for. Anyway, this is a show that's been going on for a couple of years now, but what it's about is it's everything Kubernetes. So if you can imagine something like Ignite being about all of Microsoft's stuff, KubeCon is all about Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. And it's been going on for a few years and been a couple of times, but I went along this week. Actually, today when we're recording this is the last day. And this year I spent quite a bit of time down there cruising the expo hall, mainly cruising the expo hall, honestly, and going and checking things out. And I was blown away, absolutely blown away. And I don't know why I was so surprised by this. I shouldn't have been. But it was, A, it was huge. B, it was very interesting from a multi-vendor perspective because it's not put on by a vendor, right? It's not put on by Google, not put on by AWS, not put on by Microsoft. It's a very different feel for the show than most conferences, which I thought was really interesting. And just the sheer size of it just blew my mind. Like, there were 8,000 people there.
Golly.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's a paid show. It's not free. You pay a decent chunk of money to go. Mm-hmm. And it's in Seattle, so people travel from all over the show to get here for it. All over the world, in fact. There were people, you know, there were a lot of international folks in town for it, obviously from across the country as well. But I was just, so the size just really blew my mind. For a project that's really only a few years old to have stormed the market and got such incredible mind share, I guess, for want of a better word, on how you run applications in the cloud and at scale and things like that, it's really quite incredible. They've done an amazing thing with the ecosystem around Kubernetes, or the ecosystem has really done amazing things, I should say, the community. And as you know, I mentioned on the show before, I love cruising the expo halls of these shows because I think it really shows the health of an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Who's investing in that ecosystem, right? Who's building tools? Who's launching projects around it? Who's got, you know, open source projects? Who's doing interesting things with it? A, the expo floor was pretty sizable. I mean, it wasn't Ignite size. If you've been to Ignite, it wasn't quite that, but I'd say it'd be about maybe one half to two thirds the size of Ignite's expo hall. But the interesting part is if you took out Microsoft out of the Ignite expo hall, it was probably about that size.
Wow, that's significant.
which I would say Microsoft's a solid half of the expo floor at Ignite.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a decent chunk of the expo floor. But AWS were there, Google Cloud was there, Microsoft was there, obviously. And I tweeted a photo of this, and I think I retweeted it from the Cloud Show handle as well. The Azure booth was swamped full of people. And I stopped and I just looked at this from afar. I didn't have any questions for them or anything like that. I just sort of stopped, you know, across the hall, across the way from it, and just stood there and watched what was going on. And I can't say I've ever seen that much excitement for Microsoft at a show dedicated to an open source and sort of traditionally non-Microsoft friendly audience ever before. Not like this, right? And it sort of brought a bit of a tear to my eye, honestly. Like I was kind of I was sort of stopped in my tracks. I was amazed. You know, we've spoken about the change going on at Microsoft and how friendly they are towards open source and how they're acting these days. But this just really, really made it real for me in one small moment at this conference. It was really quite incredible. So yeah, spent a bunch of time down the expo floor, and there's a lot of interesting things going on around Kubernetes, not just from the main vendors, but there's a ton of open source projects going on, and then there's a ton of ISVs or vendors building products around Kubernetes to help mostly enterprises, in all honesty, run Kubernetes better, use Kubernetes, develop apps and deploy apps using Kubernetes. Everything from things like enterprise container security systems, right? So making sure you've got enterprise-grade sort of security around apps that you build and deploy using Kubernetes, monitoring and tracing and logging and debugging and management of those apps once they're running was another really big area. A lot of startups or a lot of vendors in that space, a lot of vendors in the security space, a lot of vendors in the sort of the development and tooling space as well. So how do you make your developers productive with Kubernetes? Things like debugging, like deploying and debugging applications in a really productive way as a dev, things like that. And so there were these sort of groups of vendors, like you would see at a SharePoint conference or at Ignite or an Inspire or something like that, where you've got the compliance and governance vendors, the migration vendors, the intranet in a box vendors, the, you know, widget vendors, you know, the search vendors, you know, there's these categories of vendors that typically people coalesce around. Same sort of thing in the Kubernetes world, but just a different sort of area, set of areas in some ways. And just the health of the ecosystem really just blew my mind. Like, really incredible. A lot of investment going on there by the looks of it.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. I missed your tweet. I was pulling it up when you mentioned it a second ago. This is really surprising. Surprising probably isn't a fair way to say it.
A pleasant surprise. Yeah.
It is a pleasant surprise. I guess I am a little surprised by it, but this is, the Microsoft booth is definitely very active. The whole expo is very active, but seeing the number of people.
The expo was heaving full of people.
It sure looks like
it was amazing.
Ditch your backpack before you go in there, man. Looks like it's hard to move around almost.
Yeah, it was actually. I had my backpack on. Funny you should mention that. So I spent quite a bit of time in the expo and just sort of observing. There's all the standard players, right? So there's Microsoft and AWS and Google and IBM and VMware and Citrix and all of those players. But it's the small little onesie-twosie people booths that really impressed me, right? So there was one vendor I sat down and chatted with called Atomist, which their sole focus is around sort of the CI/CD automation and productivity for developers and DevOps, right? Okay. So not being a CI/CD platform themselves, but being the orchestrator for what your workflow is as a developer and how you get stuff in and through CI/CD and out into environments and automating all of that process. Things like that. I spent quite a bit of time at their booth looking at their stuff. And so simple things like, you know, they have a Slack bot so that your whole team can see what commits are going on and who's doing what, and you can interact with that and automate pushing out to different environments and all that sort of stuff. We're not sponsored by them, and neither am I, and all that. It was just one example of a vendor I spent some time with,
yeah,
like looking at what they're doing, and have been around for a year and a half or so, and just really investing in that developer tooling and productivity space. Yeah.
Very, so I got a question for you. So you mentioned, you know, vendors that are doing a lot of stuff around developer tools and making it easier to deploy to Kubernetes and debugging and stuff like that. And I know that Microsoft has done a lot of work with Visual Studio and being able to do a do deploys and attach the Visual Studio debugger into running Kubernetes containers that are running, or containers in Kubernetes pods that are running remotely.
Yeah.
What kind of scenarios did you see people doing the same kind of thing? Or what vendors do you see solving a problem that was not being solved by Visual Studio? Or did you? Or is it just like they want to use different tools? They're Java developers, yeah. They're Go developers, stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. The way I see that is Microsoft are doing all of that tooling for Microsoft developers.
Okay.
Not for traditional Kubernetes developers. Or not Kubernetes developers. Non-Microsoft developers, right? So like Go developers, Node developers, all that sort of stuff. I think a lot of those investments are trying to get the tooling friendly for what Microsoft devs are used to, right? I don't think the rest of the ecosystem or the community is used to using that sort of level of tooling that they're used to in Visual Studio. And there are vendors doing really similar stuff to that, but not in the Microsoft sphere, right? So there was one, the name slips my mind right now, might come to me in a second, who are doing attaching and debugging and data gathering from running applications in Kubernetes. So for example, say you've got a bug in your app, being able to attach to your production cluster and start monitoring and seeing what's going on, not to put breakpoints. They called them unbreakpoints, I think, because you don't want to break your app. You just want to points in your application and gather data from those points was there, I think, where they were going with it, right? They want to indicate some lines of code and they want to monitor those, but they don't want to stop code from executing. They just want to see what things were set to at certain points in that code. I think that's what they were getting to. Anyway.
Like snapshots. They don't want to stop everything. You just want to take a snapshot of where it was at the time.
Yeah, but you don't want to be doing that all the time. So the idea was you could attach, you could sort of point to certain pieces, you could put unbreak points in your code where you wanted to capture information. And then as your app was running, you'd be collecting and all of this data about your app running, and you could use that to help debug your app. I sort of see that as really similar to what the Visual Studio folks are doing with, you know, real-time connecting to running apps and debugging them and setting breakpoints and all that sort of stuff, but with a very sort of Microsoft twist on it from how it's come from Visual Studio. And so I think there are other folks doing similar tooling things in the Kubernetes space that I saw there. That was just one example.
Very cool. It sounds like a great show. I mean, I'd love to... Do you know if any of the content was kind of like how they do at other conferences or like how Microsoft does? They post any of the content live where people go take a peek?
Yeah, all the keynotes were definitely streamed and are available. I don't know about all the session content. I'll need to look at that a little more. But one thing in particular that I think people should go look at is if you're sick of us banging on about Kubernetes and you're like, I don't understand, then Microsoft have put out a video called The Illustrated Children's Guide to Kubernetes. And you might think, oh, stop being such a patronizing prick. And I thought that to begin with too. I was like, really, a children's guide to Kubernetes? But basically, it's a storybook style explanation of what the hell Kubernetes is and the concepts behind it, right? And so if all you're looking for is kind of the 101 download on when somebody says Kubernetes, I don't want to sit there and nod like I know what I'm talking about, but don't really, then this might be a good way to get a grip on some of the basic concepts of container-based applications.
Wow, that's cool. I've heard a lot of really good things about this too. It's supposed to be, I've heard it was really, it's really good.
Yeah, it was actually started before Microsoft. So Deus, right, who Microsoft bought, there's a guy called Matt Butcher who worked for them. He actually started this Illustrated Children's Guide to Kubernetes. And it's got a couple of characters. Fippy is a giraffe character in this book. Anyway, Microsoft at this show have donated all of the IP around this book and Fippy the character and its likeness and all that to CNCF so they could sort of use it to start a series or you know, use them in learning or training and things like that, stuff like that.
That's smart. Yeah, I just did a quick check too for people who are curious about seeing some of this stuff. It looks like the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation channel on YouTube, it looks like they are I don't want to say that this is definitely going to happen, but it appears that they're going to post the content. It looks like a lot of the session content for the conference up on their YouTube channel, because they did it for a Copenhagen version of KubeCon this year and the Shanghai version of KubeCon this year. And each one of those has, well, the Shanghai one's got 180 videos on it and the Copenhagen one has over 340 videos. So I'm sure that there's, I would guess that they've got a lot of stuff that's coming. There's a lot of them that are posted here like just a few days ago. And so. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That would be awesome if they post those. I didn't go to any sessions, so I'm looking forward to picking out a couple of them. Honestly, for my role and how we use Kubernetes, a lot of them are pretty hardcore sessions. So like, you know, there'll be internal components of Kubernetes being discussed and things right. like that, right? And the actual contributors to that code will be talking in those sessions and things like that. And so a lot of them are way beyond me, but yeah.
Cool stuff.
So that was Kubernetes Conference 2018. Definitely something a bit different. And I really liked it. The vibe of the show was just different.
We've been invited to cover it from the podcast a couple different times. And unfortunately, we haven't had the opportunity to go about. I haven't had the opportunity to come over there and see it because it's always happens to be the same time that the Chicago SP Fest conference is going on. So
yeah,
it just doesn't work. But we have a bunch of links that we're posting here from KubeCon as a wrap up. I'll post a link. We got a link here to the actual announcement for the show for the North American show, the FIPI news about being sent over to, not sent over. How do you want to say it? Donated to
Transferred, donated. Yeah.
Yeah. The children's guide as well. We've got those all linked up there as well. I did see one that I thought was pretty interesting and just kind of building on the Kubernetes offering. We have two more links that we're going to cover here that they really show how much Kubernetes is really taking off. I mean, it started at Google, then Google had that as their hosted offering. You saw Azure move to it as well. News that came out this past week was that DigitalOcean, which is another like shared hosting, cloud hosting service that's out there, they've just recently released their offering for Kubernetes as a service, which is something that we've already seen that AWS has done, Microsoft is doing with Azure, and the Google Cloud Platform is doing with their container engine as well. And yet another hosted service getting offered too, just shows how robust and what the demand is like.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely taken off.
Yeah. Another bit of news here that I see that you posted about something that kind of shows how Kubernetes is kind of, what do they call that? The strangulation pattern of all of the other hosted models?
Yes. News from Microsoft.
Yeah.
That ACS, the Azure Container Service, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is being deprecated or being killed, I think, retired, yep. I should say. January 31st, 2020. To be fair, this was confusing initially because there's Azure Container Service, which was ACS. When the Kubernetes stuff was announced, it was also called ACS because it was Azure Kubernetes Container Service.
AKS.
But now it's AKS, but initially it was ACS as well for some reason.
That's true, yeah.
And then it got renamed AKS. This is ACS, which has been used as an acronym before, right? Because it used to be, what was it, Access Control Services? No.
Access Control, yeah. Access Control.
Access Control, ACS, yeah.
Yeah, the thing that SharePoint 2013 used for apps.
Yeah, before Azure AD app stuff.
Right.
Yeah, so this ACS is the offering where it would basically rubber stamp you a Docker Swarm, a Kubernetes, or a Mesos-based cluster in your Azure subscription using a bunch of templates and things. And so they're retiring that in favor of moving to AKS for managed Kubernetes. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody once they started investing in managed Kubernetes.
It's not, but what I found that was interesting to me about this is that, you know, ACS is not that old. I mean, maybe 3 years old-ish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If that,
something like that. It's not that old. And so the idea when it first came out was what, like we said, it was DCOS, Docker Cloud or Swarm, and then they added Kubernetes to it. So to me, it shows that with their Kubernetes offering, I mean, Microsoft is generally not one to shut down offerings unless they see one that's kind of like taken over and then the other one's kind of become a bit of a pain a bit of a burden to maintain. We saw that a little bit with the caching when Microsoft had their own caching model and they started to stand up their own hosted implementation of Redis, and then they retired their caching product or caching service. We're seeing the same thing here, and it just shows that Microsoft is hey, if you want to do containers, we have a managed service for you, then we can do that for you. And if you want to use Docker Swarm, if you want to use DCOS, you can do it, but you're on your own with your own VMs. And I like the model. It simplifies it a little bit. It removes some confusion on, hey, what am I supposed to use when and where? Because I mean, you do have a lot of container offerings coming from Microsoft, and it does get hard to figure out which one should I choose. When does it make the most sense of picking one over the other?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, retiring in Jan 2020, not soon, but yeah. So moving right along, Microsoft have come out with a new product called Clarity. Have you taken a look at this at all, AC?
I have not. This is the first, your link here is the first time I've seen this.
I don't know much about it other than it's a new tool to basically take on A/B testing from what I can gather. I don't know how it stacks up against other tools, but I think being able to offer A/B experimentation in your applications is kind of important. And Microsoft are adding a tool called, they're calling Clarity to do that and help you do your A/B testing.
This is something I'm into, and I'm kind of surprised that I guess it's not surprised. I'm embarrassed that this is catching me completely off guard. I didn't realize that even Google had their own product called Optimize 360, which was their own A/B testing tool that came out of the beta, out of their beta in March 2017. There's a free version of it, but there's also a paid version. And then another, pretty much the industry leader in this whole place is a company called Optimizely, which I'm familiar with. But, and then they went to a full paid version where they used to have a free version earlier this year. Now they killed that off. So now Microsoft has their own A/B testing. I have to check this out. It says that the Bing team uses this. And
maybe it's a tool that came out of internal use and trying to productize it or turn it into an offering.
This is really cool. I'll have to dive into this a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't tried it. Be interesting to hear what people think.
That's a cool find.
Do we have any Australians that listen to this show?
Aren't those the same thing as New Zealanders? That was just for you, man.
Your call has been disconnected. No, Canadian.
Touche.
There is a different country. They're the ones with all the animals that will kill you. New Zealand's the ones with no animals that will kill you.
Just the earthquakes.
The earthquakes and the booze. Yep. But if we do have Australians listening, what the hell is going on down there with privacy and encryption laws, dude?
Doesn't matter. Encryption doesn't matter, apparently.
Apparently. So yeah, there's apparently this new bill that's passed that's basically lets the government ask vendors and things to put effectively backdoors in their encryption. I don't know if protocol's the right word to use there, but a bunch of tech companies have come out and said that undermine the cybersecurity, human rights, or rights to privacy of our users, including Apple, Google, and Microsoft. Pretty horrifying. And I'm no expert in this area, right? So I'm just going off what the headlines and the articles are saying about it, but it doesn't sound particularly good. So yeah, if we have any Australians listening, keen to get your take, definitely tweet us and let us know what you think about this. No idea what the background behind this is, but I'm guessing it's to help, you know, the theory is probably help law enforcement track crimes down. I bet that's how they're putting it, right?
Well, they are. And so I have some thoughts on this. So the idea behind the law is to, like you said, law enforcement, military, the government needs to have a way to be able to see unencrypted stuff. You can't hide everything from them, which that's the premise of the law. And so they're saying you have to give us a way to be able to either have a backdoor or to be able to, for you to unencrypt something to be able to see it. But from a philosophy point of view, trying to fight technology, trying to fight evolution and progress that we're making with legislation never works. It's never successful. If this is the case and you did have to have a backdoor in this, somehow criminals are going to be able to take advantage of this. And then you're going to have other countries be able to take advantage of the fact that there is a backdoor in it. We saw the flack that the NSA and the United States got in trouble for doing this. You saw for putting their own malware into routers and stuff. You see the issues that have been coming up with the Chinese company. I can't pronounce the name, but Huawei.
Huawei. Something like that. Yeah.
They got in trouble for doing a similar thing recently about this as well. It's just, it's, I don't know, it's dumb. To me, it's dumb, and it's anti anti-progress. You think that anybody's going to want to be able to stand up a business or a site or a service inside of Australia when you see this? And because if I had a choice of where I'm going to host my data, is it going to go here or is it going to go somewhere else? I mean, I talked to somebody last week and they're like, they work for a law firm and they do a lot of work with a bunch of different companies, multinational companies, and they aren't allowed, they have SharePoint, but they refuse to go in Office 365 because the company is scared that with the data is inside of Office 365, even though they can provide their own encryption key, Microsoft has the encryption key. And when you tell Microsoft to delete the encryption key, they still keep it around for 30 to 90 days. He's like, what's stopping Microsoft from getting a subpoena from like a national security-based subpoena and never telling us that, hey, we had to unencrypt your data and give it to the government? Like,
nothing's stopping them technically, nothing. Right? I don't think, other than their morals and position on how they should handle matters like that.
Yeah, and it's like what you've seen, the way you saw Apple respond to the FBI about trying to decrypt, get into somebody's phone, somebody's iPhone. The way you saw Microsoft and a bunch of other companies pile on when data was demanded from a Microsoft-owned data center in Ireland, mm-hmm. and how Microsoft, they were held in contempt, but they're like, no, we're not going to do this because they took an exception to it. So it's funny that that governments think that this is going to work. And just, it's almost like if you happen to see like the inquisition that the Google CEO had in front of Congress the other day, and they were talking about how does Google search work? Is there a man behind the curtain that's actually responding and giving us all these pictures of Trump? When they say, when I do a search for Trump, when I do a search for idiot, I get the picture of Trump coming back. It's like,
dear.
God, just, it's so depressing.
What, if you want some facepalm moments, watching sessions like that is really hilarious, right? When one congressman holds up an iPhone and talks about it, this guy's, you know, Sundar's business, you know, making these phones. And he's like, the iPhone's not made by Google. You've got to wonder, you know, like, surely there should be some level of knowledge before you're allowed in these things, right? Before you ask dumb questions like that. Basic knowledge on some of these topics wouldn't go amiss.
It would be, you have to wonder sometimes too about the other things that they're asking questions on in other hearings, like how knowledgeable are you on this topic? We're knowledgeable on the tech side. And so at least those questions.
Arguing with them about how things work as well. So apparently there's one exchange where it's like, so people, you know, can't manipulate search results. And Sundar's like, no, we don't do that. And the guy's like, I don't believe you. I'm not really sure what to say. I mean, you're wrong.
Yeah. There was one exchange, and I'm not going to get this exactly right, but it was one exchange where Sundar was responding and saying, we get something like, I'm going to make up some numbers just for perspective. We get 1 billion search queries a day. And of all that billion, 70% we've never seen before. So, and we simply can't, at scale, we simply can't manipulate all of those responses that are coming back. And you see the senators like, or whoever was, is it senators or the House? They're like, yeah, I thought that there was a response by, or there was a headline by Wired Magazine that was, Congress had a huge opportunity to talk about privacy with the Google CEO in front of them, and they completely blew it. And I was like, you know what? That absolutely nails it. What you could have focused on and talked about, not one party saying, hey, when I kept doing a search based on our bill, all the responses that came back were all negative, and you had to go to the third page to find positive stuff. I'm like, man, I thought that the best place to hide something was on the second page of Google search. Right? Nobody's ever going to go there and find something. Yeah. So it just...
frustrating.
It's depressing.
Hey, speaking of depressing, let's do the opposite and do some picks.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
What do you got for us this week, AC? Pull us out of this depression of poor questioning from senators and so forth, and talk to us about your picks.
I've got some picks here, and I got to tell you, I've got I have four picks. I'm only going to do two right now. I got two more I'll share with you later, but I've got two. So the first one is a bit of news of something that happened this past week. So Voyager 1 and 2 are two probes that have been sent out that are just there to explore the solar system, really, well, now to explore the universe. They were launched in 1977, so 41 years ago. It's crazy. Voyager 1, or actually, so Voyager 2 actually was launched before Voyager 1, but because of the, just by a few days, but because of the trajectory, Voyager 1 picked up speed a lot faster than Voyager 2 did. And so Voyager 1 left what's called the heliosphere, which is, let's just say it's the range that is that the sun reaches out to. That's defined as like the outer reaches of our solar system. So it doesn't just stop at whatever the planet right before Pluto is, that we're, because Pluto is no longer a planet. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, just some fun jokes there. I love the t-shirt about your mom and Pluto. Anyway, so that Voyager 1 left before Voyager 2 did. Now, Voyager 2 has, quote, left the solar system. And it's just, it's interesting now because it is now the second man-made object that is now left the solar system that is running outside of our solar system. Every once in a while, both of these probes, they do phone home and say, hey, I'm still alive. They don't do it all the time. They just do it every once in a while. And they're just now on their way out. They're going to eventually come in contact with some other solar system now, or some other, you know, maybe sun, solar system, whatever you want to call it. We're not going to be around when that happens because the next time it's going to come in touch with a star is in about 40,000 years. So I'll be a bit dusty by then.
We may have downloaded your brain into a new MacBook Pro or something. And we'll have AC MacBook Pro edition.
It'd be kind of cool though if you could look in the future and we actually are doing real space travel and inner solar system travel. Yeah. Can you imagine it'd be cool to sit there and do a flyby and like going, hey, we caught up and check this out. We launched this thing like 200 years ago and we just caught up to it. That would be so cool.
I do feel a bit of FOMO, the fear of missing out, got to tell you. That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah, that's my first one. How about you? What do you got for us?
Okay, I got two. I got a space one and a non-space one. I actually changed my pick while you were talking. Oh. I'll go with my non-space one first, and it's on the home automation side of things. So I moved into a new house, put in some curtains and blinds and things like that, and have put in automated shades, right? So in the US, they call these things roller ones, shades, right? You roll down shades. So we put shades in downstairs and put in motorized ones, right? So you can get a little remote and you go boop, 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 and it goes up and down and all that. And so in the morning, they go up automatically. In the evening, they go down automatically and you can have scenes and all that sort of crap. But the cool thing is like everything these days, they're all connected to the intertubes. And so from your phone, while you're away, you can do things or you can, you know, fiddle around with them. But I have found they've got this little device called the MyLink, which is like their internet gateway for your shades or for your blinds, mm-hmm. stuff. It has an API. And so, they give you these little remotes and you can use your phone, but you can also connect to it and send it JSON through it's kind of hokey because it's not an HTTP API. It's just a TCP socket that you open to this connector, but you send it JSON. It's kind of weird, but anywho, it is JSON and you can open and close your blinds. And so I'm in the middle of this project at the moment where I want to connect my Lutron lighting system that I'm about to put in to my Somfy shade system so that when I push a scene button in my lighting, it will set all the lights in the living room to say movie level or whatever, and then the blinds will go down to watch TV or a movie and things like that. So I'm connecting the two. And both of them have APIs. And so I'm writing it in .NET Core, and it's going to run on a Raspberry Pi, and it's going to monitor one for button pushes and control the other one. So it's sort of being this intermediary between the two.
That's cool. So it's not like a smart things kind of a thing. It's just you just control it independently of that.
Yeah. Gotcha. I'm going to hook it up into smart things as well, but the Lutron lighting system has its own set of scenes, right? And so I've got this keypad that's going on the wall with six scene buttons. And so you scene each thing and then away you go.
That's pretty cool.
Anywho, I've just had a notification my battery's running flat, so we better be quick.
Okay, go. I'll let you do your next thing, and then I've got one.
Okay, there's an article here called NASA's Unintentional Venus Lander. It's this really cool story about the first probe to Venus, where there were all these things that were supposed to pop off this spacecraft and go down and measure the atmosphere and then burn up on entry and all that. Anyway, one of them actually crash landed and survived for 60 minutes after it landed. Like, it wasn't supposed to land. It just went hurtling through the atmosphere, experienced like 500 and something Gs, massive amounts of heating. All of the other ones, like, you know, as soon as it hit the dirt, basically they busted up, switched off, and didn't get any more signals. Anyway, one of them ended up not landing is really the wrong word. It survived. It detected like some sort of soft dust that was kicked up. So it must have landed in a big dusty patch or something, or crash landed in a dusty patch. Anyway, it's transmitted for 60 minutes. And so they got a whole bunch of interesting atmospheric data and temperature data and all this sort of stuff about Venus. But it was never supposed to do that. It was just supposed to go through the atmosphere and collect samples and report back along the way. But it ended up crash landing and surviving for like an hour and a bit.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I did not know about this. I'm going to go back and read this article.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Since you're running short on your battery, my last pick is also space related. I didn't know about this. This was news to me. I shared it with you the other day. I thought the same. You said the same thing. Remember, we lost one of the space shuttles. We lost early on, I think it was STS-25 when it was the Challenger shuttle that was lost on launch. And then we lost Columbia when it had things strike the heat shield and it ended up burning up and falling apart on reentry. Well, apparently what happened with Columbia almost happened on the second launch post Challenger. So we almost lost. If this had happened, we would have lost the entire shuttle program very early on. So
yeah.
The shuttle program, it went, you know, 137 missions, I think is what it was.
Oh, STS-135 was the last mission, but it wasn't all sequential, right? And there were also like letter designations within there. So I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so this one, the title of this article is "All Dying All Tensed Up, 30 Years Since the Troubled Secret Mission of STS-27. So what this article describes is that essentially when it was the second launch after Challenger, after Shuttle went back to flight, and what this one did, this was Discovery, or no, this was
Atlantis.
Atlantis, that's right. This is Atlantis. And what happened was they were doing a top secret mission where they were deploying a
payload. Yeah, NSA or something. Yep.
Yeah, and there was a screw up about it where they released it, then something wasn't working with the payloads that they had to go back, rendezvous with it, capture it again, do some stuff, and then re-release it. Mm-hmm. But the part that was interesting about this is that when they looked at the videos after the launch, a piece from one of the side rocket boosters had fallen off and had struck the shuttle and it hit it right behind the nose and the underbelly of the shuttle. After they looked at it, they instructed the pilot or the commander to use the remote camera on the cannon arm and was reaching around and looking at the shuttle. Mm. And because at the time the tech was not as good, and so the images that were downloaded to NASA were grainy, they weren't high resolution. And the engineer said, "It's fine, everything's fine." But guy that was operating the camera, he's looking and going, "This is not fine. This is actually pretty significant damage that's going on here." And so they went and did. The article explains all the back and forth that was going on. When it landed, when the shuttle actually landed, and the astronauts came out of the shuttle, there was a bunch of engineers that were standing around the front of the shuttle and they were looking at it and all these engineers' mouths were agape, like,
"We dodged a bullet.
We totally dodged a bullet. We can't believe this thing didn't burn up." And so the idea was the pilot was getting really frustrated and told everybody else that was on the mission on the shuttle, was like, "Well, let's just forget about it and keep doing what we're doing and we'll just go home. And there's no sense in dying all tensed up because there's nothing we can really do once we come in." But it's interesting that it talks about how we would have known if there was a problem when they were coming in, if the angle was a little bit different, and even by like a quarter of a degree. So
it really reminded me, you sent me a text a few days ago and told me to read this because I thought it was really, or you said I should read this, right? Because it was really interesting, and you're 100% right. So amazing. like incredible. First up, the second one back after a huge accident, right? Fatal accident. Seven people lost their lives. The program was in jeopardy and they still take a bet on this. Like, I can't believe that NASA was in that headspace of like, oh no, it'll be fine. Like, really?
Yeah.
You said that as well when the O-rings were frozen and that didn't work out so well. So I can't believe like just mentally how they made that call. And then also for the astronauts to initiate that sequence to deorbit, knowing that their ship was damaged as well, must, you know, that must have felt very strange. And the commander, I think Mike Mullane, I think was that what his name was? Yeah, Mike Mullane. Oh no, he was a mission specialist.
Gibson.
Robert Gibson, yeah. They were talking about, you know, watching the deflection of the elevons and things. And if it went without out of a certain range, then they knew they were doomed, right? And imagine watching that needle and going, oh, it's creeping up, it's creeping up, it's creeping up, it's creeping. Oh, no, it's creeping down, it's creeping. And just your life is no longer in your hands. And he said, you know, if he saw it go over a certain deflection, he had about 60 seconds to tell him exactly what he thought of their analysis.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
And that needle was, it was, what was it? They, if it went outside of a
quarter of a degree or something. Yeah.
Yeah. If it went outside of a half a degree, they knew they were doomed. But if it went up to a quarter of a degree, that's when they knew that there was a problem. But there's, once you start going on reentry,
there's no turning back.
Yeah. You're in the grasp of gravity. You're coming down and you just gotta, hopefully you can get through that. But what was sad about it? First, if you look at the article, if you scroll down, what is it, the fourth or the fifth picture, there's a really good overhead view looking down at the launch site and seeing Atlantis taking off. It's not that high off the pad. But the other thing that's kind of sad, well, it is sad about this, is that this is how we lost Columbia. And it's kind of, you know, knowing that it was a possibility, but you dodged a bullet. I mean, there was comments that I saw from at the bottom of the article saying it's a shame they didn't learn the lesson. But I mean,
well, maybe if it was the other way around, maybe if it was Columbia first instead of Challenger, this would have been different, because it wasn't until Columbia that was the thermal protection system and the carbon things being punctured. Whereas this was at the nose cone, it was the tiles, but there's so many problems with the tiles during manufacture and with the design of the shuttle and things. If Columbia had happened first, maybe things would have been a bit different, but yeah. You've read it as well, Into the Black, the story about the shuttle and those who flew her or something like that is the name of the book. It's fascinating. And what blew my mind in that book was the story about STS-1, right? The first shuttle mission where it all came together and they flew it, and the number of problems and how close to catastrophic and fatal disaster they came on that mission. You go look at the photos of the thermal protection system after STS-1, and you're like, I cannot believe it survived. And there's there's hundreds of tiles missing, like all over the shuttle. They all fell off, right, in a bunch of different places. And they've got a photo looking out of the back of the cabin towards the tail of the OMES pods at the back. There's two sort of big bulbous white things. And the number of tiles missing off those is crazy. And fortunately, it's not in a super critical area for reentry, but they're like, we had no way of telling underneath what was, I don't think they had the Canada arm on that mission either. And so they couldn't tell what was missing underneath, but they looked out at the back and were like, oh, yeah. Great story. I love these sort of stories.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I got some cool ones for the next show, man. I got two nice. Cool ones I think you'll like.
Excellent. Keep them up our sleeves. Radio AC, thanks for another great week. Good to have you back in the saddle at home, and we'll catch up next week. We've got an interview coming up, I believe.
We do. I sat down with Jason Himmelstein, and we talked Azure App Insights and Power BI. Talked about that a little bit, so we'll talk about that. That'll be our topic for the next show that'll come out the week of Christmas.
Excellent.
Have a Christmas show.
Yay!
Yeah.
All right, take care, man. Catch you next time.
All right, man. Yep, take care. See ya.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.